Sergei Rachmaninoff was a Russian composer, pianist, and conductor who was considered one of the finest of his day. Robert Wyatt, American music specialist, Steinway artist, Smithsonian lecturer, and music director of Highfield Hall, joins us to talk about the life and music of Rachmaninoff, who died in 1943. Welcome.
Hello, Mindy.
It's always fun to talk about these great musicians and their life in music. We always learn something new. And I'll be learning quite a bit this morning because I have heard of him, have heard some of his music, but don't know a whole lot about him.
Well, he was a very interesting man. He had this unique gift of having three very strong musical persona. He was a magnificent pianist, one of the finest of his day, and that was saying a lot. He was a wonderful conductor, and when he lived in Russia, he conducted for the ballet, for the opera, for the symphonies. When he left Russia in 1917, he stopped conducting. And of course, he wanted to be remembered most of all as a composer. He had the finest of training. You know, one of his good friends when he was a young boy was Tchaikovsky, who gave him work to do and who listened to him play the piano. And just imagine having Tchaikovsky as one of your friends when you're a little boy. And when he began composing, it was in the style of Tchaikovsky. But then he began his own style, which had sumptuous harmonies and fascinating rhythms, which were often instituted by his love of folk music and dancing of Russian countrysides.
Yeah.
And he was an excellent orchestrator. But most of all, his biggest gift was his endless, passionate melodies. It's almost like a William Faulkner sentence where it keeps going on. You never want it to end. And to hear an example of that, we need to listen to the middle movement of the Second Symphony composed by Rachmaninoff in 1908.
One of the things that I read about him was that he had this ability to sound as if he was improvising during a performance, when in fact he was not, but that his hands just took over. He had large hands, right?
Yes. Well, he was beautifully trained, and he was identified as a prodigy by the time that he was 7 years old. So his grandfather brought a teacher from the St. Petersburg Conservatory to live at Rachmaninoff's home. And when he was 10 years old, he moved to St. Petersburg, where he took lessons. He was a lazy young man at that time. When he was 13, they moved him to the Moscow Conservatory, which was number one.
Wow.
And there he just really blossomed.
Yep.
He had wonderful teachers. He had people like Scriabin as a classmate.
Tell us a little bit about his background. His family was aristocratic?
Well, sort of. It was
sort
an
of.
Old aristocratic family who mainly cavalry personnel. His mother was a very wealthy woman who was the daughter of a general.
Oh.
And in her dowry were five estates, of which Rachmaninoff's father inherited all five and lost all five ultimately before he took off on the family and just departed from their existence.
So what is it that you would say that sets his music apart then from all these other greats of the day, you know, Tchaikovsky and some of the other folks that were around in his time? What made him so, what was it that really set him apart?
Well, besides the melodies that we've talked about, he maintained Russian Romanticism into the 20th century. So where people were trying to experiment and do new things, Rachmaninoff was very interested in doing what he loved the most. Mm. When he composed at his finest, he was outdoors, listening to birds sing and the wind hit his brow. He loved to compose outdoors, especially in the morning, and when he was in the country at his estate, Ivanovka.
All right, so it's next piece. We're going to hear Prelude in C-sharp minor. Tell us a little bit about this. What this is.
Well, it's a very interesting piece because it was written in 1892 when Rachmaninoff was just 19 years old. And it was one of the first pieces that he composed after he finished his work at the Moscow Conservatory and became a, quote, free artist. So he wrote this piece. It's a magnificent piece. You can hear his love of bell tolling at the very beginning. It became so famous that everybody wanted to play it. He played it constantly, and he grew unhappy with performing, and he really abhorred the piece ultimately. Rachmaninoff later went on to compose 23 more preludes so that he would complete the set of 24 preludes covering every major and minor key of the alphabet, just like Bach did and Chopin and Scriabin and Debussy. I think the thing that he disliked most about this piece was he never really got paid for it.
Uh-oh.
In Russia, the publishers did not have to give you royalties, so he was just given a pittance, 40 rubles, when they bought the song.
Right. And of course, you said that was 1892 when he wrote that. He was, as you mentioned, quite fond of Tchaikovsky and was really grief-stricken when Tchaikovsky suddenly died in 1893. It was just a year later.
Yes. It was one of the real tragedies in his life. Also, it was the same time when he started composing in a new style, not so influenced by Tchaikovsky. He wrote a few pieces, a trio elegique, which was dedicated to Tchaikovsky because the entire country was in mourning for quite a while after Tchaikovsky died. He was their number one man.
Yeah. We're talking with Robert Wyatt, American music specialist, Steinway pianist, lecturer, and music director at Highfield Hall. We're talking about the life and music of Sergei Rachmaninoff. One of the things, too, that we mentioned, he had these large hands. He also had a really great memory, right?
Oh, yes. He could hear a piece, say a symphony orchestra, and he could play it the next day or 10 years later or 20 years later and remember it all the way through. Maybe a 25-minute piece.
That's amazing.
It's almost like a photographic memory through oral remembrance.
And what kind of a span did he have with his hands?
Oh, it was huge. I'm considered to have a normal man-size hand, which is about a tenth. Rachmaninoff had another third larger than me. So he had massive hands. In fact, his hands were so large that he had to make sure that he didn't use just his hand size for the technique because no one else would be able to play them.
Oh, wow. That's really interesting.
Yes.
All right. So now, next we're going to hear a piece that's not really heard. We're probably not going to be so familiar with. This is a religious piece?
Exactly. Rachmaninoff was a very religious man, very spiritual. Most of it came from his maternal grandmother, who visited quite a bit when he was a boy. And she would take him to the Russian Orthodox masses, where he was enamored with the chants of the mass, and especially fond of the sound of the bells.
his favorite piece?
Yes, it's one of 15 movements, 15 different chant parts of the Russian Orthodox all-night vigil. And Rachmaninoff thought that it was his finest composition. And many people, of course, think that it's certainly one of the greatest musical achievements of the Russian Orthodox mm-hmm. Church. Rachmaninoff requested that this be sung at his funeral, which it was.
Yeah. Let's talk about his family life a little bit. We mentioned where he grew up, but he married, had a lovely marriage.
He had a very nice marriage. He married his first cousin, which was illegal in Russia.
Ah.
So he had to be married in a barracks, doing it through the military, which he had some control of. But he'd met Natalia when he was a young boy because they summered together on Natalia's family estate, Ivanovka, which when they were married, the Satins, the parents of Natalia, gave them as a wedding present. Mm. So he always composed his finest pieces at Ivanovka, and it was destroyed by the Bolsheviks in 1918. It's one of the reasons why it was unsafe for his family to stay in Russia.
So he loved Russia. He didn't really want to leave, but it was 1917 when he came to the United States?
It was. He left. Well, first of all, we had the terrible December Revolution in 1905, where things became very uncomfortable for the bourgeoisie. The February Revolution of 17, where Nicholas II was not only abdicated, but eventually murdered with his family. It was the end of Imperial Russia and the end of the Romanov dynasty. It was also a time where Rachmaninoff needed to get out of Russia. So in December, he and his family boarded a train at Petrograd, and they went to Sweden, and where Rachmaninoff was playing a recital. And they took just some scores, some vodka, some food to eat, some clothes, and they left their fortune, their estates, everything was left, and none of them ever returned to Russia again.
So as much as he loved Russia, he was never able to go back.
No, he was a nomad for the last 25 years of his life.
All right, tell us about the next piece we're going to hear.
Okay, Rachmaninoff wrote his first major work, a symphony, in 1897. When it was premiered, it was an absolute disaster. He had to run out of the hall before he was accosted by the critics. And for 3 years, he became severely depressed. Not only was he upset with his reaction of his first major piece, but he had some personal issues as well. He went to visit his distant relative, Leo Tolstoy, who told him to buck up, to keep composing. But when Rachmaninoff played some of his own music, this is what Tolstoy told him. It is such music needed by anyone? I must tell you how I dislike it all.
Oh, no. So this is what we're going to hear?
So Rachmaninoff went back to Ivanovka. He starts seeing a psychiatrist. And his first piece that he began writing after 3 years was his second piano concerto, which is his most famous of all, and the one that you commonly hear on radio broadcasts.
Thank you.
3 years nothing, and then this.
Yes, it's remarkable that after being depressed and having writer's block for 3 years, he sat down and composed not only a magnificent piano concerto, but his most popular and famous piece.
Mm. Now, one of the things we talk about a lot of composers and musicians, Robert, you and I, and some of them have very colorful personal lives. And you say that Rachmaninoff is actually your favorite man as a person.
Yes, he was a lovely gentleman. He was very faithful to his family. When anybody needed money, he sent the money. Soldiers from World War I who were recovering from injuries, he sent the money. He brought a lot of his friends from Russia to the United States. He paid for their fares. He paid for their apartments. Mm-hmm. His cousin and teacher, Alexander Zelotti, he set him up in the United States to become a very famous professor here. And he was loyal all of his life to his wife, mm-hmm. and he loved his daughters and his grandchildren. Although he was a serious man, Stravinsky called him a 6.5-foot scowl because he never seemed to smile. He was a very happy man, actually, although he did have depression from right. time to time. And he loved to laugh, and he got so excited sometimes that he would start crying in his laughter.
Wow. So it sounds like he was pretty serious about his music, but very happy in his personal life.
Very serious. He composed every day when he could. Now, after 1917, and when he came to the United States the following year, he needed to make a living for his family. So the composition almost stopped completely. Of all of his hundreds of pieces, he only composed 6 pieces after 1918 until his death.
Wow.
Yes.
So this next piece we're going to hear is?
Is the Vocalise. It's a song that Rachmaninoff wrote in 1912. He began writing songs when he was a young boy, setting Russian poetry, folk songs, legends. His first opera, Aleko, won him the gold medal, only one of 3 ever given by the Moscow Conservatory. This particular song was one of 14 songs published in 1912, his Opus 34, and it's written for voice with no text, just a vowel of the singer's choosing.
Hmm. Singing, do we know?
This is Renee Fleming, the famous soprano singing. I had many choices of different sopranos or tenors to sing this song, but this is my favorite.
Your favorite. And how interesting, except I mean, the interpretation, it's really up to the singer which vowel to choose.
Exactly.
That's really amazing. So it's different, could be different every time you hear
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
Oh, that's fascinating. So 1917, when he comes to the United States, at that time, we had a lot of the Tin Pan Alley stuff happening or just about to happen, right? Is my time frame right?
Yes, it's very interesting because although it happened a few years after, Rachmaninoff was one of the judges at the Experiment in Modern Music where George Gershwin premiered his Rhapsody in Blue. So Rachmaninoff was sitting in the audience along with his friend Leopold Stokowski.
And of course, piano roles became really popular,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, when he came to the United States, he had no money, so he needed to support his family. He eventually made 345 recordings, but first he started with piano rolls, and he recorded for the Ampico, the American piano company, and he made a few recordings with Edison. Edison was running a phonograph record machine. They didn't get along too well, Rachmaninoff and Edison. Edison thought he pounded on the piano. Uh-oh. And eventually in 1925, he signed a contract with RCA, who he recorded with the rest of his life.
And so a piece that a lot of people are familiar with is Flight of the Bumblebee. And this was one of the last of his piano roles?
Well, yes. He made piano roles from 1919 to 1929, and this was made in 1925. In 1929, a piece by his friend Rimsky-Korsakov. ¶¶
comes to save the day.
Yes, the person who composed the Mighty Mouse theme stole it from The Flight of the Bumblebee by Rimsky-Korsakov.
That is so funny. Towards the end of his life, he ended up dying from melanoma, but he did not know that he had melanoma.
No, they told his wife, but she chose not to let her husband know.
But he rather quickly after that diagnosis died, right?
Yes, but he was still concertizing. It was actually in a concert that he was playing in Knoxville, Tennessee, that he just collapsed, and they brought him back home by train. And he died shortly afterwards in Beverly Hills, where he had a home very near some of his friends Stravinsky and Arnold Schoenberg.
All right, tell us we're going to hear a couple of things here in the Rhapsody on the theme of Paganini. So
yes, this was a piece, one of the six that he wrote after he came out of Russia in 1918. When he left Russia, he not only lost his home and his money, but his desire to compose. And when he lived in the United States, he was not happy with composition. And so he and his wife, in 1932, built a beautiful home in Lake Lucerne area of Switzerland, which they called Sinar. S for Sergei, A for et, for and in French, and A is for Natalia, and the R, it's Rachmaninoff. So Sinar was their beautiful lake home in Switzerland. And there he wrote one of the most famous of all of his pieces, the Rhapsody on a Theme of Paganini, which is 24 variations based on Paganini's own piece, his 24th Caprice. And he loved Paganini's music, and the theme has become so popular. And Rachmaninoff himself recognized the popularity of this piece, especially the 18th variation. And he said, "This one is for my agent."
All right, so tell us, we're hearing different variations there.
Yes, first he starts with an introduction, and then he plays a variation. It takes him a while to actually get to the Paganini theme. Once he gets to it, though, he lasts forever. But when you get to the 18th variation, he takes the Paganini theme, he turns it upside down, he inverts it, and instead of playing in A minor, which the rest of the piece is in, it goes to D flat major, and it's the most luscious melody you'll ever hear. Now, Dan Tridle told me that this was part of Somewhere in Time, the movie made in 1980.
I saw that movie.
You did?
I did. It was Jane Seymour and Christopher Reeve, right?
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was also in Groundhog Day in 1993.
Oh, I didn't realize it was in Groundhog Day. Yeah, it was a sweet movie. Well, see what he's inspired, still continues to inspire then. Right?
Absolutely.
And we should mention that you're going to be giving a lecture on Sergei Rachmaninoff on Saturday, February 23rd, 10 a.m. at Highfield, and there's more information on that at highfieldhall.org. So, Robert, what are we hearing on our way out here?
We're going to hear the beloved 18th variation, the one that everyone knows and loves.
Robert Wyatt, American music specialist, Steinway artist, Smithsonian lecturer, and music director at Highfield Hall. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, Mindy. It was lovely.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.